Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati as we inch closer to the end of the year. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Feels like we're racing closer to the end of the year.
Yeah, not if you're not ready for Christmas. Shh.
I'm usually behind my life when it's not the holiday season, you know, always trying to stay a step ahead, but three steps behind. So, and same with the, you know, as far as what we are covering, things are not slowing down, Sherry.
You know,
people need to chill.
I always need a break. Think about that, like going into the end of the year, that'll be quiet and such, and it never is. And I don't know why I keep thinking that. Today's special guest, we're going to talk about some big things today.
Big things.
Big. So we're hosting again, repeat guest, Steve Leeper, who runs 3CDC, the City's Development Corporation. And we're going to talk about, wait for it, 20 years. This year marked their 20-year anniversary. I've been meaning to do a story all year. And so this is, we're going to wrap it up with a bow, because 20 years, this city has seen so much change.
And behind this 20 years. It all has been the nonprofit development agency, formerly the Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation. That's where we get 3CDC from. And Steve Leeper came from Pittsburgh, where he was doing similar things for that city, and embarked on, we'll have to ask him if he really knew that he would be here for 2 decades.
Oh, that's true.
2 decades. I think when people take a new job, they think, 5 years or so, 5 to 6. 20 years is a long time, especially in this city. Think of all the political leadership that has turned over in 2 decades.
Oh, I'm aware.
Oh, you are aware.
And you know what? As each leadership, 3CDC has kind of taken on a little bit of a different purpose under them, like working together and recrafting the vision. So we'll talk about that too. In the meantime, they did have a big announcement. So I think we should talk a little bit about it.
I mean, what an apropos guest, because the headline we wanted to talk about for this week's podcast is some news on the convention hotel.
Which we know is happening. Honestly, the headline is, this is happening. 3CDC and Portman unveil new convention hotel renderings timeline. I love a good rendering, Burl.
So we have a site.
We've
long had a site, which is the area on the west part of where the convention center is. And so that's been all raised and is ready for development.
It's at 5th and Plum.
We have renderings now.
Pre-COVID, I went to a press conference about this hotel in the parking lot.
So what's new is the renderings. What's still unknown, even though apparently they know who it is, but they can't say yet, is what brand hotel is it going to be?
All right. So I think we should get out our crystal balls.
All right.
First of all, you guys, if you look at this, okay, it is a 300-foot tall glass clad hotel tower with a 6-story podium. It is, you know, it's this gleaming, we don't have anything like it in Cincinnati. It is having 800 rooms. Alicia Reese, everybody, really pushed for that bigger footprint of it. It's going to have all this meeting space.
I wouldn't call it a boutique hotel. This is a large hotel.
If you look at it.
Okay, so you were describing it. It's the rendering anyway. Mm-hmm. It's tall. It's got that like glass tower, you know, contemporary hotel feel. I'm going to go Red Roof Inn. No.
This is a JW Marriott.
You guys,
I did not write this story. I do not know. Honest, Steve's not even in here yet. I don't know. But if I look at this, I've stayed at a Marriott in Indianapolis, mm-hmm, that looks just like this. I've stayed at a Marriott in Nashville. Looks just like this. We'll see.
And Marriott does a lot of business in this city.
And they do a lot of convention hotels.
A lot of convention hotels. I think, you know.
So they know.
They don't know.
Yeah, they're under non-disclosures.
I think what you really meant was your magic eight ball.
Right.
Because when you turn that over, the little thing that floats up in that blue water says, all signs point to
a JW Marriott.
Okay, well, I think that's a
better... It is just what we need, though. I don't care what the flagship is. Honestly, it's going to be somebody who runs convention hotels. It's not going to be some fly-by-night is not building this. This is going to be amazing for the city.
All right. Well, speaking of amazing for the city, that leads us right to our special guest, Mr. Steve Leeper.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. Excited to talk about the last 20 years with Steve Leeper. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Every once in a while, it's good to look back. Mostly, we spend our whole lives being like, what's happening tomorrow?
Well, we're going to look back today a little bit. So I got my first question is, when you came from Pittsburgh and took this job 20 years ago, were you thinking, this is going to be a 5, 6, 7 year deal and then I'm out?
You know, it's a blur, but I remember coming and visiting, and I got recruited to come here, and I told my wife I was coming to talk to them, and he goes, you're not serious about that, are you? And I said, I'm just going to go see if it makes sense for me. And we toured Over the Rhine at the time, and of course, you all remember what Over the Rhine looked like at that period, and met with the corporate community, and I could see that they very much cared about their city. And I just thought that this job felt, you know, met my background so well. So I went back and I said, you know, I think I might take that job. And she goes, you're kidding me. Now, she was 7 months pregnant. We had a 2-year-old, no family here. So she wanted to kill me. She still wants to kill me today, but for different reasons. But I did not think I would be here 20 years. But it has been the best job I ever had.
And you were at the time leading a very similar operation.
No, I was running more of what would say is a public works job. It was the Sports and Exhibition Authority. The city and the county of Allegheny created an authority to carry out the construction of the two stadiums and convention center and Riverfront Park.
Well, that sounds like a lot. Take out the stadiums, yes, but very some development.
It was more of a public works though project, okay. You know, because issued bonds, we built something, you know. So this, I think, is a lot more. It's a lot different in many ways.
What is the elevator pitch when someone says, "What is a 3CDC?"
I usually describe it as it's a not a full service real estate not for profit development corporation that does a lot of things that private developers do, but many things that a private developer would not do. And it's we see the city as our client, and we are carrying out sort of the redevelopment efforts in a very targeted area on behalf of the city. And so we meet regularly with the mayor and the city manager and members of council and make sure that, you know, what our development agenda is consistent with what their expectations are.
Well, should we go through the greatest hits of 3CDC? You mentioned Over the Rhine when you came here.
Well, it was a 3-prong job to start, right? They asked you to do 3 things.
They did. Fortunately, the corporate community had already employed a consultant, HRNA, to sort of guide them through development plans. And their recommendation to the corporate community was you focus on 3 areas, Over the Rhine, around Fountain Square, and then at the banks. And so we were, you know, the first thing we took on was the redesign of the Fountain Square, which was met with a lackluster response from the public.
That's sort of like almost every project. Initially, you're being very polite to say lackluster. People don't like change in Cincinnati.
Well,
and you were brought here to make changes.
What? Well,
but you know, they just came off the public works project of the stadiums. They had a bad taste in their mouth. They thought we're spending $48 million to move the fountain 60 feet. I mean, that's what it. But anyway, we got that underway. In the meantime, we were buying property and Over the Rhine. And then we were trying to negotiate with, you know, the county and the city on what to do with the banks. And then, of course, the county decided that they wanted to take that project on. And they just sort of swooped in and took it. And
the banks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, that was the best thing that could have happened to us, to be honest with you. It just... it would have been too much, mm-hmm. and we would have been over our head. And we were over our head to begin with, but I think we would have sunk. So we were, in many ways, thinking that this was the best thing.
You're buying up properties in Over the Rhine. What's the basic model strategy for 3CDC? It's not just buying properties, but at some point, you've got to find people to take on the redevelopment and the investment.
Yeah. So that was controversial too. So we're down there actually carrying out the construction of Fountain Square. We then are on a parallel path buying up property, which was, people were very concerned about that. There's three things when you're buying property. You can buy property that's available, but it's not very good for development, or it's not a big blighted influence on the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You can buy the properties that are really challenging to the neighborhood, blighted influences, bad uses, nuisance uses, but they may not be available and might not be great development properties. And then you can buy those, try to go after those properties that you think are great redevelopment properties, but they aren't available and they're not nuisances.
Right.
And our prime target was the nuisances. And even though they might not have been available, they were the carryouts and things like that. So we went on that pretty hard. And then what we did was we partnered with a series of small developers, Bill Baum and Rick Kimbler and the Model Group and Urban Sites. And we had them essentially that first phase of Gateway One was to introduce those folks and carry out the development. We sort of provided not only financing, but that sort of master development role. And it worked out well because we just couldn't have handled it. We were a 3 or 4 person shop at the time. So we needed their support. And they were great partners.
How big is 3CDC now?
We have about, we can get measured different ways. In terms of personnel, we have about 70 people in the corporate office. And then we have about roughly 100 folks that work full time, that work either in the public spaces, in the business districts, or in our parking facilities, that are our employees. So 170 people or so. And then we have hundreds of part time people that are seasonally related. But we were a startup then, and we had a budget of what was the corporate's contribution, which is $1.1 million in 2004. That was our budget. And they still give us $1.1 million every year, but we have, probably almost a $26 million operating budget.
That's amazing growth, even for a nonprofit. I've heard people say many times that nonprofit is a great tax status, but not a great business model. So you had to take that initial investment from the corporate community and figure out, how do you grow to achieve all of these goals?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. They not only support us with operating funds, but they've supported us with almost $200 million worth of capital funds that we can use to carry out our real estate and then match it up with bank debt and state money and city money. And so we're like any other private developer when we have a project that is maybe worthy of public support. We go to make our case to the city manager and city council and hopefully get their blessing. So, and then there's some projects we've really taken on behalf of the city, like Washington Park or Fountain Square or Ziegler Park or mm-hmm. Music Hall or the convention center for that matter.
Well, I don't even know where to start with all of this, but, going back to the beginning, and you alluded to this before, that the Fountain Square got a less than enthusiastic. Same with buying up properties up and down Vine Street. There were gentrification concerns. This very newspaper was concerned that a non-elected body was making fast decisions. There was transparency concerns. You had, besides the development challenge, you had a PR challenge as well.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about those beginning days. Were you at one point regretting, like, why am I even here? Everything I do is a fight.
Well, it wasn't like it was roses in Pittsburgh. Let me tell you something. I mean, you ever been to some rough people in Pittsburgh?
I'm from Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. She's from Youngstown, you know. So, yeah. We all know this guy. So there were days that I was driving home and said, what did I do? Yes, there was that. But that was... those moments were fleeting, and that's only normal. And I'm not one of these people that looks back. You know, you got to look forward. And the gentrification narrative at that time, you know, I think they could convince people that that was true, even though the properties that we were buying up were essentially vacant. The only properties that were occupied there were primarily affordable housing projects that had long-term covenants that would maintain that they remain affordable over time. Those properties are still there, and some of them we bought and renovated. So those properties are still there. The narrative is, I think, is still there around a little bit, but it's very much died down. You know, we're still getting a little bit of it when we're trying to get to do the community center up at Findlay Market. But I think the turning point there really was Washington Park and the redo of Washington Park. And then on the heels of that, the redo of Ziegler Park. And the really, when you go to that space, it is clearly the most democratic space in the city. You go there and there's folks from all walks of life. The people that we are a partner with, that are our staff that work there, are from the neighborhood, and to me, that's water off a duck's back. It doesn't bother me anymore. I'll have that conversation with anybody, and it's at times it becomes a little bit of a lazy narrative, to be honest with you. It's an easy thing to say because it was bad before and it's nice now, so it had to be gentrified. Well, you need income into a neighborhood to strengthen it. You can't, and the condition of that neighborhood, quite frankly, we should have all been embarrassed. We should be embarrassed. In fact, that's the way we look at everything. Like that convention center, we should be embarrassed about that. We should be embarrassed about Ziegler Park. We should be embarrassed about what's going on north of Liberty as a community. I mean, people would go to Music Hall and run to their cars afterwards. And so, you know, we used Washington Park as the day center for the homeless facilities because they didn't have adequate capacity. I mean, how does anybody think that that is the quality of life we want in our cities? And I think that's changed now, and, you know, I'll stand by that.
I think seeing the results, the dramatic results, and for me they're especially dramatic because I was out on the market 12 years. And when I worked at the Enquirer in the late 90s, and was living in the Clifton area, I would drive up Vine Street and lock the doors, you know, and pray that I didn't get stopped at a red light because I would be propositioned by either someone looking for money or on drugs or, you know, soliciting prostitution type things. And that's not how it is anymore. And if you would have told me back then that there's going to be $1 million condos that people are going to be lining up to buy, I would have laughed. You know, I would have just, no way, no way. And that changed just in the 12 years I was gone. When I came back and saw, I'd read about it, but walked through Washington Park and saw the programming that was going on there, the, you know, the craft markets and music and everything, which we sponsor, by the way.
We do.
A little plug for that.
It's really lovely. This time of year, it has the Nutcracker theme, decorations. Very festive.
I think people had to see it to understand it. We had gotten so conditioned to that area just being, you know, over the Rhine was synonymous with, you know, the bad things, and people just accepted that. And now you've completely changed, you know, what, when people say over the Rhine, they have a very different, you know, reaction to that.
You know, but people should have the right to question us. I mean, we're working in the public realm. We're working in the public eye. I just want the questioning to be fair and not, and it has been, to be honest with you. I don't feel like we've ever really been overly criticized or unfairly treated, or, you know, it's been incident from time to time, but we've been really fortunate. I think the community's really accepted us, and so I don't really look. When we started in 2004, for all you HBO fans, I mean, it was The Wire. That's what was going on there. I mean, and you know, that part of town was Amsterdam, and went on in Amsterdam, stayed in Amsterdam, and that was a bit of a problem for us. And I remember going, used to go running at night after work, and I think they all thought I was a cop, but, you know, because otherwise, what's this crazy old white guy running through the neighborhood for, you know? And I feel very strongly that, you know, the intervention was necessary. Otherwise, I think some of the challenges that we saw in Over the Rhine were going to bleed into the Central Business District. They were already bleeding into the Central Business District. And the fact that Kroger hung in through all this was amazing, and it's a testament to Joe Pickler and Dave Dillon and Roddy McMullen.
You're talking about their corporate?
Yeah.
Yeah. The legend, the story that's told when people talk about 3CDC is that the CEOs of our Fortune 500 companies at the time, you mentioned Pickler, you had Smale, basically convened a meeting with city and county leaders and said, you need to take a different approach to redeveloping the city or you're going to lose us. Yeah. Like, not blackmail, but just the cold reality, like, you know, the inherent problems we have because of the way our government is set up. We were missing opportunities to bring reinvestment, to redevelop, to have a plan that, you know, you have to take this out of the, you know, the elected's hands and create a development corporation. And even the electeds at the time were wary of that, but that it was the business leaders that came together and basically, you know, threw the gauntlet down. Did you feel in the beginning any of that, you know, did you have to win over the elected officials as well?
And that's,
or is that narrative, accurate, or has that become a legend now?
It's not quite what, I mean, the real, where this really came together was, you are correct, the corporate community was one, they were already working on some things post the civil unrest together, as the corporate community was.
In 2001.
Yeah. Correct. And it was A.G. Lafley and Charlie Lucan, and Charlie Lucan asking A.G. for help. So Charlie,
who was the mayor?
Lucan was the mayor at the time, yes. He really was the one that convinced A.G. And think about this. And this is the problem around cities around the country right now, where there's challenges in many central business districts. To get into this business, redevelopment business, is not, it requires some intestinal fortitude. And it's because you can't get in and get out easily. It's a sucking sound of your capital resources. It's a sucking sound of your personal resources, you know, human resources, time that you're spending in meetings and so forth. And most importantly, it's reputational risk. You know, P&G and 3CDC are synonymous with each other, you know? And so it needed that leadership at the corporate level, and AG and George Schaefer and Jim Zimmerman and Joe Pickler and John Barrett and Bob Castellini, they all were in. Charlie took the nerve to say, we're gonna trust you guys, and took some risk. I mean, we weren't just a corporate or nonprofit. We were a startup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so Charlie and I met, and Charlie was part of the interview process. Charlie to this day will tell you that, you know, I was the, you know, it was jump ball that he could have gone either way. he then seated and stood behind us, and he got torched over Fountain Square as well, you know.
Right.
And so I think he blames me for not wanting to run for that second term. I think he's
really,
yeah. He's kidding,
right? Would it be fair to as you fill in some of the historical gaps there? If there was a father of 3CDC, would it be Charlie Lucan?
It would be Charlie Lucan and A.G. Lafley.
Yeah.
those two guys were the creators of it. Absolutely. And then there were other, obviously, this is the other names that I mentioned of corporate leaders. Jim Zimmerman's still on the board today. Bob Castellini's still, they show up.
I think John Cranley would be like the hardworking son who had to do all of the work and get it through council and everything and get it passed and write all the legislation and do all of that.
As the finance chair at the time, there was critical legislation that John worked on the tax increment financing districts that are the prime tool today that got this all done. I mean, it was brilliant how they wrote that legislation. It was done before I got here, which was they created those two tax increment financing districts that were not, there's a district for over the Rhine and it's a district for downtown. He merged them. He said there's a OTR in downtown east and an OTR in downtown west. And so the growth in the values that produce the incremental revenues for redevelopment purposes were created downtown, but it was the Robin Hood effect. We took it and rebuilt over the Rhine with it. And it was brilliant. And, I can't say enough about, what that thought process was. And John was really behind it. And Charlie would say that, Charlie got it pushed through, but it was that was really John Cranley's work as finance chair before I got here. I saw that. And when I came here, I saw what they were doing. I said, you know what? I think we can do something with this.
What would you say, how much of what you've done have you picked and known that that's what's the next thing that needs to be done? And how much has been requested of you from our leaders?
I think the leaders primarily rely on us to sort of think through the development strategy. And it's been sort of a, linear development. We're sort of pushing, we started the southern part of Over the Rhine and pushed north. And downtown has been, around the concentric circle of Fountain Square, but now we're going into the Fountain District and we want to sort of close that loop between Over the Rhine and Fountain Square. We started with Court Street and then we want to do some work around the library there, I think is important. So we define most of the strategy and then go to them, and meaning the city manager and the mayor, and get their buy-in. And then they may suggest things from time to time, push us from time to time and challenge us. But it's always in a positive way. We would never carry something out if the manager and the mayor don't want us to. But they rely on us like our board relies on us to come up with a strategy. It's what we do for a living, and that's what they expect from us.
Do you sit down and have strategy sessions like at the beginning of the year, or is it kind of like when one project's done towards the end of that, you're like, okay, where are we? What are we doing next?
I wish we were that cerebral that we're,
us too, right, bro?
That's right.
I even though I have a master's degree in city planning, I wouldn't say that I'm one of these people that sits down and takes long-term strategies in place. Part of the reason why it does not require is because we're not starting from anew. Over the Rhine is Over the Rhine. It is, it's not like we're plowing it down and going to start all over again. It's a series of historic buildings and what are the best uses. Some of it's opportunity too. When you look at our, four priorities, they haven't changed. We believe that civic spaces are critical, that you got to take and redo them, reimagine them, and then manage them, program them, take care of them. That's critical to our efforts. And then everything else is pretty obvious. You take care of your historic buildings. You want to densify your downtown. You don't want a series of surface parking lots or underutilized properties. You want to get them and then try to densify them as much as possible. And then, of course, we very conscientiously, particularly in Over the Rhine, you don't see Starbucks and other now, part of the problem was early on, we were taking on any tenant that had a heartbeat, right. Anybody didn't want to come in. But, we curate now where we want it to be. And even downtown, when you really look at it in the Fountain District, these are our folks. These are all Cincinnatians. And we should be proud of that. And they are when you really look at who are some of the real heroes in these last 20 years, it's the people that started off. Early on, Jean Robert, God rest his soul. He had the Lava-matic first, and then, you know, of course, Dan Wright and the 4EG guys came in with Lachman, and Dan Wright with the Senate, and Jean-Francois with Taste of Belgium. So these guys, you know, they were pioneers, and they are the ones that drove the traffic down here.
Did you anticipate you were going to spark a renaissance in cuisine, chef-driven restaurants?
That is the thing that I never saw coming, that eventually we would become really an entertainment food and beverage, and the quality and the professionalism of some of these. I mean,
how they fed off of each other. You have, you know, all of these people that came through Jean Robert's kitchens, and you have, you know, the our friend that owns Nolia, who came through the Salazar restaurant.
Chef Jeff.
Yeah. It's quite amazing to me.
Well, and you look at who they are. I mean, Salazar, you mentioned Jose, and he was the first time restaurateur. Dan Wright was the first time restaurateur. I mean, the Lawneys were in the food business, but they were in the, you know, sort of fast food stuff. And so they, that whole Thunderdome group is just fantastic. And then you get guys like Anthony Sitek, who is, you know, Crown Republic and Rosie's and Five on Vine and La Santé. You know, he never had a restaurant before. I mean, he came here, and not only did he not come in a restaurant before, but he started out in what I would say is a tertiary location over there on 7th and 8th Street, and he has a following. He can make it happen. And so we are so – and then you can't – you got to say enough about the 4EG guys, who, you know, Lachman and Low Spark and Pilar and they've just and the Righteous Room, Igby's, they have been fantastic partners.
One of the things that I think opened people's eyes a little bit or more, so maybe, you know, Washington Park, obviously a huge, very visible thing. Another very visible thing and a need that people identified early was the lack of a proper grocery store downtown, especially when you have Kroger headquartered here and they don't even have what you would call a full service high-end grocery store. We have that now. That was part of a 3CDC development. Do you think that was also...
That was intentional. I mean, yeah.
But as far as the maturity of 3CDC and the, you know, the journey that you guys have taken, do you think that was a pivotal moment?
Yeah, it was.
A pinnacle moment?
It was. And we've been messing around with, you know, apparently Kroger had been messing around with a downtown grocery store for years and had some swing and misses. That site is a perfect site. It was, again, getting to talk about densifying, it was a service parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was owned by the Cantor family, and those are Mark and Fred Cantor gentlemen. So we teamed up with them and North American Properties, who we had already done a project with, where we would be the, you know, we helped with the negotiations with Kroger and then had to buy the land and get the financing together and then work with the city on the financing plan. And then we, and on all of those types of projects, whether it's 8451 or 7th and Sycamore or 4th and Race, you know, we work with those private developers. We have one contractor, one architect. We have separate contracts, but we have a contract with the architect and that contractor, and so do they, but they're the same people, so we don't have this pointing at each other. And then, you know, we have separate ownership, but we partner together, and it's really worked well. But that grocery store, I was really humming when it first opened, and then, of course, the pandemic hit. And it changed a lot of things, as you well know. And then it's really coming back now and doing fine. And it's a, you know, a beacon of activity on there on Court Street. And it's now starting to flourish along with the other little establishments that we've developed, have been able to attract up there.
I just talked to our core reporter last night, and he was shopping in that Kroger on his way home. It's so convenient. It's like, because it's easy to park in, and then you just shoot home.
Well, it seems like it was all part of the master plan. You anchor that Court Street area with Kroger, then you start, you know, you make that like a walkable, you talk about density. There's, you know, the Butcher was there for a long time, but now there's other businesses around it. There's a place to eat lunch there.
Yeah, we work with with Len on that, redoing his building was all part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was, that is a wonderful establishment. Of course, then they supply a lot of our restaurants with food. I mean, yeah. Some of the meat they do. It's good.
What is, no pun intended, the secret sauce to restaurants? Because you did Boca, Soto, and Igby's. Because we've had just a recent closing of restaurants that have really kind of devastated people. Not yours, but less like we just keep hearing one after another. It's been a bad end of the year for restaurants in the area. What is the secret sauce? Because they've been open so long, and Soto is the restaurant. It's the hardest restaurant to get into in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the talent. I mean, David Falk and his team are talented. They know their attention to detail when you go in there. It's like you, in all of these restaurants, but you go in there, you go into Ruby's. The attention to detail that you get from the service there is, second to none. And then you physically go into a place like Boca, and you feel like it's probably no place in New York City.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it is a beautiful in there.
It is a great, and it's in a great location. It gets driven by, Aronoff, and the things that go on at the Aronoff is very supportive. But, it's a tough business. And those guys have seemed to manage to fight through it. You know, we've had some closings. But it's always on top of our mind to make sure that we're doing things that it continues to drive traffic. And then also make sure we've created an environment that people feel like it's clean, it's safe, it's active, and we got work to do because, you can't assume that everyone's always going to be, doing $1,000 a square foot. You have to be on this. And, that's part of why we are as much a management team as we are a development team. And that's why, we want to promote this district. This Fountain District is special. And when you really think about it, you're going to walk out of that convention center and you're going to go a block and you got Mita's and Salazar. We've got a new concept going in next to Salazar. We have, the new vintage sports
bar. The new concept going in next to Salazar?
We haven't signed the lease yet, but there's
going to be. I was like, did I miss that?
Yeah, we are.
No, this is where you're going to make news.
What's that?
Is it a restaurant concept?
Yes.
Next? Okay.
Well, it's a bar entertainment.
Okay.
Yeah. So you want to curate that. We've got Tokyo Kitty there. We've got Baru there. Then you go up the street and Anthony Sitek's about to open his new establishment up there in January, February. We've got a new bar going in right next between Vintage and another one of our great
wine
partners.
Wine bar, right? Wine bar?
No, that's already open on 4th Street.
Okay. That's right around the corner from us, Sherry.
This is in Foundry.
What's it called? Wine?
Something to Wine About.
Something to Wine About, yeah.
It's a good name.
Yeah, so.
It's hard to keep up with all the new restaurants.
I know. It's right next to Club Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had our team lunch at Vintage.
You did?
We did.
And I had lunch on a Monday at the Davidson. That's
having lunch on a Monday. Imagine that concept.
Yeah. It wasn't too long ago when Macy's said they were closing down, that store at Town Square.
We thought it was
the end of, oh my gosh, and Saks and everything. In a blink of an eye, it's been redeveloped and you've got activity there.
Well, it's funny because not
it seems
funny.
Like a blink of an eye. Seems like an eternity, but
it was, was right at we bought that from that group prior to the pandemic. We were thinking through what we needed to do there. And I remember when the pandemic hit, in March of 2020, we were not going to roll up in a ball. And so I remember calling the mayor and we were all masked up. And it was, I think it was like May or sometime of 2020.
This would have been John Cranley at the time.
And he came over to my house. We sat on the front porch, had some lemonades.
Socially distancing.
Had lemonades.
Lemonades.
And we said we got to focus on three things. We got to get the Foundry started. We got to get Court Street done. And we got to get Welcoming done. And the Streeteries and the long-term outdoor dining. And he pushed that through. Now, the corporate community took a lot of risk. I mean, the Foundry, imagine this, and imagine having this conversation with your board where we were, I don't know, $14, $16 million into that building. No tenant. It was our money.
Yeah, that's before Ruby moved up.
We had no tenant. Mm-hmm. And then we fortunately were able to nail down Deloitte first, and then the Big Kahuna, and then Turner, and then the Big Kahuna was DMG, who, if you've not been in that, in those offices, they're unbelievable.
And they're growing.
And they're growing. And it just been, it's been a great partnership. You know, I've got to meet Gary Mitchell. He and I, when I first, we were trying to get them as a tenant, I, through a friend, got an introduction to him, and he invited me out to his house, and the rest is history. You know, so
how things happen in Cincinnati.
That's right.
Well, good, you know, small, big city.
But, you know, it, but it's the same thing about, here's the difference between Cincinnati and many other cities, you know, and I can, you can say, see this in, you know, St. Louis and Pittsburgh and other places. We have these built, as you say, the building was in a critical location. We go to the city and say, look, we're going to get control of this. And then we need to figure, we don't know what we're going to do with it yet, but we need to figure it out. And we, you sort of know they have your back. And so, and the same thing happened with Saks, and they, the city, we said, well, you want us to buy it, or are you going to buy it? And they said, they had a right in their agreement with Saks to get that building. And they went ahead and pulled the trigger on it. And then we went together and we jointly, we are building, we are redeveloping that building really on behalf of the city. There's a revenue sharing agreement and all that sort of thing. So it, it's worked out, and those are going to be, when you think about it, between both spaces, it's going to be 250,000 square feet of office space when people didn't think people were going to be in the offices anymore. So I give credit to the partnership and the trust and the willingness to take risk and leadership.
All right. We need to talk about what you're working on now. And that's probably one of the, if you look at all the things, big and small, this is a big one. This is the convention district. And man, when you walk around that part of town, you know, like from where Saks was, which is going to be Paycor's headquarters now and Salazar's restaurant underneath, that's under construction. I mean, we've got, we almost look like Nashville now. In fact, I, did I read we had to steal a few cranes from Nashville because that's where all the cranes were in America?
Like, well, we need some more cranes, but okay.
but didn't a crane come from Nashville for,
oh, so, I don't know. That's news to me.
Okay.
Breaking news.
But if you go to Nashville, you see the cranes, you see the construction, you see what they're doing there. We've got, if you walk around, I mean, it looks under construction. I mean, it, you look at the whole facade ripped off of the convention center. You've got construction happening at the former Saks headquarters. We've got Elm Street closed now, you know.
City Club 2 is being built.
City Club's being built. Fourth. But this convention district,
Mercantile building.
Mercantile. So much happening here. And news this week, we saw renderings of a hotel. So, like, this is all really happening. Like,
it's happening.
A convention hotel.
Yeah.
We, a couple of years ago, we were talking about that in the same abstract, oh, we really need one terms, like we talk about the arena, you know? And it's happening.
Ooh. What do you think about the arena?
Let's finish on the convention. Okay. So was this like, when did the moment, when was the tipping point that this all started to come together?
Well, I think the tipping point is when, you know, the mayor and the commissioners decided that this is something they want to do and to go, and then they gave us the assignment to go figure it out and come back with a plan. And that's what we did. And we had a lot of good partners, and the state legislature couldn't have been more supportive of what we're doing, both in terms of needing state enabling legislation changed and then some capital resources, both in state grants and tax credits and things
plus
like that.
Plus the drama of the Millennium Hotel.
Plus the drama of the Millennium Hotel. So don't bring that up. So we, you know, I think when a community decides they want to do something, things can get done. And so, you know, we've had tremendous political support from both the city and the county. I mean, the two, both Cheryl Long and Jeff Ludo have been fantastic partners. They've worked well together. All this thing that city and county don't get along is just not true. I you know, experienced the cooperation firsthand. We, and then a lot of this is luck too. You know, we were concerned about whether or not we could bring this in for the budget. We really wanted everything in this building. You know, we wanted this outdoor terrace that's going to be built up on the, off the junior ballroom out on the, and we were concerned, you know, we're going to have to dumb this thing down because the cost of debt was higher, but we hit the bond market at the right time and just pure luck. And we were able to raise more money than we could have gone either way, depending on where the CPI was coming out one Wednesday and was it going to go up or down. It happened that the inflation was slowing. So the next day, the bond market was just perfect. It had gone the wrong way. Yeah. We'd have lost $30 million, not gained $30 million. So we have everything we want in that building and then some. So we're not going to cheat ourselves. We found a great partner in Portman. We went through a process. We recruited. I've been talking to these folks for years, and the time then came, and they submitted, and we think we've got a wonderful partner there. And we've got a plan to move this thing forward. We're going to probably start some work, investigative work and some environmental work on the site in January. And then we're going to keep working hard on the design and getting the construction costs in the right place, put the financing together, and we'll be, you know, the second quarter of, we'll start full construction second quarter of next year on that.
When's the next big announcement coming for that?
I think it'll come when we still have to go to the city and the county for approval on this, on what the plan is and how much money we are contributing to this, and then what are we getting in exchange for that. So that's a development agreement, and that would probably come in the, you know, first quarter of next year. Okay. We'll go to both the city and the county to get approval. Yeah. And we've been, you know, talking to them all along. And
I'll be there.
And then, you know, Saks is the same way. I mean, it's moving along. We're also going to redo that that tired old garage that's there. That you're not going to see that ramp going up into the second floor.
Happened with 4th and Race.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to
be. You have a vision for these garages, and it's not that.
Yeah, it's not that. So, and it's going to be attached. You know, you'll be able to get right from there to the convention center hotel and the convention center itself, but it's going to be totally reimagined, and it's a, you know, we're going to probably sink $15 million or more into that facility.
So you're saying the hotel is going to be connected to the convention center?
It will be connected to the convention. There'll be, okay. It is one of the few sky bridges we will actually allow.
Yeah. Oh, the skywalk.
Man. It's a very Cincinnati thing. But it is important because the hotel is going to have actual usable space for the convention center. It's not just going to be rooms.
Correct.
It's going to have all these ballrooms, and it's going to be like adjacent
meeting
space.
Rooms. Yeah, yeah. Exactly right. It is going to have ancillary infrastructure that will be, you know, viewed as part of the convention center.
Is it on schedule?
The convention center is on schedule. We will get that done. The plaza will be done. We'd like to put we're going to put the skating rink up there next year. That's where it's going to go.
Wow. Instead of Fountain Square?
Our goal is to put it at the new plaza.
That is news.
Hold on. I don't understand. Where are you putting it?
There's a beautiful public plaza that's going to be
across the Millennium Center. Where the Millennium Center. Okay.
So we're closing Elm Street. So you can't get through. Going to be a big, there's going to be a pavilion there with a bar and just like, and then we're going to put the new convention center, or excuse me, the new skating rink there.
Why not Fountain Square?
Because, you know, it's physically, you got to kind of jerry rig it in there.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do something else there in a really cool, you know, winter, Christmas, holiday, something at Fountain Square. And so it'll be,
you know, I'm not sure.
And it will be getting
that.
Ready that the convention center will be open. That's when it's supposed to be opening, right? January of 20.
So, we typically open the November 1st or so, we open the skating rink. So it'll be open before the convention center actually will be doors.
What about the hotel? Is because I know Julie Calvert talks about, she's so excited about, we're going to have all these huge conventions. Is the hotel going to be built in time, like in tandem?
Well, it's a little bit behind now. You're always a little behind because you're always planning your conventions 3 and 4 years out.
Right.
So it's lagged behind the convention center construction simply because, you know, trying to put, you know, a financing plan together for you know, a $580 million project, is especially, hospitality coming out of the
528 million.
That's about what it is.
Coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah. So it's, we're a little behind, and then it's, you know, it's going to take a little over two years to build, you know, so it's a big building.
All right. I have to ask this question.
Yeah.
You being part of 3CDC since its inception is probably, I don't think there's a lot of cities that have something exactly like 3CDC, but they all have some form of a development corporation, maybe not structured the same way. I imagine it to be someone in your role that's like, that's a high turnover position. The politics, the, you know,
different leaders coming in.
Yeah, exactly. You've cycled through what, four mayors now? Luke and Mallory.
Yeah, four mayors. A lot of city managers.
Cranley, police, now AFTAB.
Police
Speaking
chiefs.
Of blurs.
I mean, city managers, the revolving door, you know, some, you know, the hairy black hair, all of these things. How much longer are you going to be the CEO of 3CDC?
Earl, don't push him out.
Yeah. I'm not pushing him out, but I mean, like.
I'm going to speak like a, you know, a baseball manager or something. You know, I have a contract for a couple more years. I'm under contract until they kick me out. But yeah, I mean, at some point in time, the institution will be the institution, and you got to, you know, pass your baton on at some point in time. So that doesn't mean I don't want to work, but at some point in time, I got to do that.
All right, Burl's also not going anywhere. Not going to allow that.
Oh, well, we'll see. I'm not under contract, so I can go tomorrow. I'm an at-will employee.
Yeah. Okay, we have to go back to the arena, though, because that is not
And you're way over time, Sherry. I was getting for those who can't be
we
in the studio with us,
sit down with Steve every
Sherry
day.
Sherry purposely sits with her back to producer Phil, so she can't see him giving the time.
No,
cues.
I just like the view
but
of the
I
stadium.
Can see him. All right, so wrap it up,
we
Sherry.
We have to ask.
You got
like,
to ask.
Where, do you have an ideal spot where you think the arena should go? You know downtown better than anybody.
I mean, the chamber came up, and I sat on the committee. The chamber came, I thought, did a really very good job of this. I think, obviously, the two locations that seem to stick out, and they both have the pluses and minuses, is the site near the convention center, and then there's a site on the old town center garage. They both have their pluses and minuses to them. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of them. I think those are the two best sites. You know,
the site near the convention center in Queensgate, kind of?
No, it's just south of the convention. It's like across the street from the convention center. It's really because there's going to be
just
land
south of it. So it would be west of the hotel.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's you know, that's land created by the
Bridge Forward
Bridge project. Yeah.
Well, by the Brent Spence Bridge. I don't know that Bridge Forward was.
They would say they were. Okay.
Okay. I'm not getting stepping
the
in
opportunity
that
the bridge construction project has presented.
There we go. Yes. Look at
so,
that.
So, you know, and that one, you know, that has some benefits to downtown, you know, and look, you can say what you want, but that TQL Stadium has done wonders for the Over the Rhine neighborhood. They are, it's just been, you know, look, I'm a little partial. This PNC Park, I think it's one of those, you know, ballparks that fits perfectly into a city. That TQL Stadium fits perfectly into that neighborhood. And they, what they've done for that community, Carl Lindner and Jeff Birding and all the farmers and investors there. It's incredible. And you go there at any given night. So can arena, you know, it's just, there's a lot going on there. That's the challenge. That's the biggest, I think, that, you know, Music Hall has an event. TQL has an event.
The
arena, there's a lot going on. So
you put it where the CET
a couple, you know,
is.
Too many sugar, you know, too many pounds
can
of sugar.
Can the arena go where the arena is now?
I'm not so sure that's, I think it's a tight slide. It was determined that that's physically a challenge site.
Okay. So one more question about that. If it doesn't go there, do you think that there'll be like a line of developers ready to develop where that is because it's on the river?
I think, like anything, I think it has the potential of being a great development site. It's like anything else. You just got to be working at it every day. I mean, we still got land sitting out here that we need to get moving.
He just
on.
Pointed to the banks, which was going to be my put you on the spot question to wrap things up. You mentioned at the very beginning of this interview that it was a blessing you didn't have the banks.
Because you were very busy.
Because you had everything we talked about. Once the convention center is, you know, takes on a life of its own and your role is done, do you see 3CDC coming to the rescue of the banks for Banks 3.0?
Really? Because I do.
No. We are.
But look at it. We can look right out the window. There's still plenty of concrete, more importantly,
is we haven't heard any plans. Sure, we saw GE's giving the port some money to do a study, but it's not like there's a line to develop down there.
No,
it seems like it might be ready when you're ready.
Nope. We're focused on north of Liberty. Over the Rhine, north of Liberty, and we're focused on the area around.
So it never will happen.
Well, look.
Like it's
as I said, I got a contract when I'm done. Yeah, they can do anything they want. I think our board's very clear that we're focused on this north of Liberty, and we're focused on this area around.
And there's a lot to do north of Liberty. There's
a lot to do around
infilling
Jean Robert's table, that library area.
I was going to ask. That is the thing I would say. Then I promise I'll be quiet. That is the thing I think I've been the most shocked about. When Jean Robert's table closed, it was going to be something, and then it never has been something. And that's the most shocking thing. It's like, why? Because it just seems so perfect of a place to have something.
I would say that, you know, it's an area I wish we could have made better progress on. We are going to start progress there, but the Ashley folks are doing the old LPK building, and then so they're taking some risk, and that's great what they're going to do, and it'll, I think, help us. But you're going to start to see a little bit of work being done on that Jean Robert's table building. We originally wanted Jean Robert to go from there to where Court Street Kitchen was. That was the plan, that he was going to go move table up to where Court Street Kitchen is.
So a little bit of work, does that mean you're getting it development ready, or you have a developer and you're not telling us who it is?
No, it's getting it development ready. We are talking to some people, yes.
Okay.
The people that we're talking to, I think, can be successful there. There's, you know.
Well, especially once the convention center.
Yeah. And, you know, we'd like to try to get, you know, we own one of the parking lots on that across the street. We'd like to get that moving, and interest rates have been killing us, but it would be a mixed use development there. And it's just been a struggle, you know, to get, you know, where interest rates are and construction costs went. They weren't matching up. So we hope to try to get something done there around in this coming calendar year.
All right. Well, to wrap it up.
I know.
We got to wrap it up. What didn't we ask you that you want to make sure our audience knows, if anything?
What didn't you ask?
Because we asked you a lot, but like...
You didn't, well, you kind of did, you know, when am I leaving? I think you were trying to ask that question. I don't know if you were doing that because you want me to leave.
No. It's a remarkable run. So. I mean, like, congratulations, 3CDC.
I know, on Steve 20 Lee, years.
On 20 years, the impact you've had on the city, the storms you've weathered, you know, the battles with electeds. We won't get into that.
Yep,
I'm not going to mention any of that.
Thank you.
Because, you know, we've reported on that, much to your dismay. So congratulations on 20 years.
Well,
but
thanks.
In that vein, you were going to say what?
I think, you know, you'd always ask, you know, is there something that, you know, could have been done or done differently, or
like regrets, or what would you have done differently?
Yeah. I mean, you spoke about our public relations early on. You know, I probably could have used a public relations professional.
This is where we give a shout out to Joe Rudemiller, because
Joe Rudemiller here. Yes,
you know
yes.
what? He's so helpful because he just understands the landscape of the city. Like, I can call Joe. He's so media friendly, and he controls what you guys are doing. That's his job. But he also can be helpful if I'm like, well, I heard this about something else. Have you heard this? And like, can this work? I've heard like this plan. Can it work? And he is very helpful.
He is
with like just
He is the best.
The knowledge,
he really
yeah.
is. And I always kid him that I always have to, you know, mop up after him because of his media relations and lack thereof.
Yeah, that's not
But
true.
It is so
I
untrue.
Think it's the opposite.
Well, I'm very happy.
It is so, it is so untrue. And on top of that, he's incredibly good looking.
Oh, this is true.
I think there's many cleanup in aisle 11 issues going on that Steve creates for Joe.
That is so true. That is so true. He's the guy mopping up, man.
What would you have done differently?
You know, I do think probably the just probably some more outreach and community relations we could have. I could have done a little better job at, you know, this whole theory is, you know, just stick your head down and keep going. I think has some benefits to it, but it can sometimes push people the wrong way, and we could all learn from that kind of thing. And so now I'm kind of the kinder, gentler, you know,
version of Steve Leeper.
Yeah.
For the next 20.
For the next.
This is what we're getting for the next 20.
It's just because it's Christmas.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right.
Well, that's very kind of you to have me here and your kind words. I appreciate it. But please know that this 20 years was a group effort. And not only of my colleagues, the board, the city, but all the folks that run those businesses, bought those homes, took risk on the city. Those are the heroes, really.
Well, thank you for your time and congrats again. And we're going to be on the edge of our seats waiting to see what your next big announcements are.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Thanks for
Steve.
Having me.
Honestly, Burl, one of my favorite interviews is always Steve Leeper, just because he knows all the things that are going on in the city. He is a visionary, and that is not pandering. I ask him plenty of tough questions. He'll be happy to tell you that. Wait, has he told you that? Probably.
He is also probably one of the most unassuming power brokers in town, too.
Like, yes.
He's just a nice, average guy. It's not uncommon to run into Steve Leeper when you're walking around downtown. You know, he's just, he's not just, you know, the leader of the development corp. He's invested, he cares about the experience of being downtown.
So I was.
And walks everywhere.
I really was going to write like a 20-year retrospective of 3CDC. It's kind of a story that got away from me this year, hence why we're having him on now, because I don't want to let it go by unnoticed. And I'm having lunch at Pata Rojas on Court Street. Delicious, you guys. I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong, but nonetheless, they were great tacos. And I'm on the patio having lunch, and here comes Steve walking by. And I
of
was
course.
Like, who planned this?
Right.
But you know what he was doing? There had been a street festival. This is like a Monday, the weekend before. And he wanted to check to make sure how did things go. He was checking in with owners and everything. He wanted to make sure everything was cleaned up properly himself.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has people for that, but he did a walk and was checking on himself. And he really just was like, hey, you guys, and he kept on going.
Well, he's always a good guest. A repeat guest. He's in that elite group of repeat
Yes.
Daxo Cincinnati guests. Are you ready for the holidays, Sherry? Are you ready? You look ready. I mean, you're dressed very festive
Obviously,
today.
Obviously, I planned my wardrobe.
Red burgundy bow in your hair.
So I have some more stuff to do.
You got more stuff to do? Your list is probably really long, though.
It is. I sent Christmas cards this year. Thank you, Sam Green.
We got your Christmas card. It came yesterday.
It's a good reason to take a family photo.
Yeah. You know what? And it's the last one we got, so it's on the top of the pile.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you come into our house and look at our stack of Christmas cards, the Coolidges.
We don't do one every year, but we did do one this year.
Who's that man sitting next to you?
I don't know. A stranger. It's my child.
Like the last Christmas card, you had like a little boy, and now there's this like tall, lanky,
yeah. Alex looking.
Yeah, I think he looks more like you.
Do you?
But he already has that angstful teenage boy expression, you know?
You think he wanted to have his pictures taken down at Smale Park?
No, he didn't want to have his picture taken. I can barely get a picture of my kid.
Yeah, no, he did not. But he got into it towards the end. And Smale was lovely the day we did it. It was more of like a fall.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago we did it, and the leaves have changed.
Of course you did it a few weeks ago. You're not one of those people that waits to the last minute.
Well, it's more expensive if you wait to the last minute. And tonight I'm having all my girlfriends over for a Hallmark movie night. I'm going to wear Christmas jammies, and I'll really be in the mood after tonight.
That is the Sherry Coolidge-iest thing I've ever heard. If that, I just created a new adjective.
Okay.
Sherry Coolidge-iest thing I've ever heard. Have you done anything fun besides like going through your list and getting it all done?
I've done a little travel to see friends of mine.
Yeah.
I'm fresh off going to Washington, D.C. But you know what wasn't that festive?
What?
The national Christmas tree.
It was not?
There is a pall over Washington, D.C. as the transition comes. A lot of people are losing their jobs.
Right.
It's Democrat to Republican. You could feel it. And honestly, I could have decorated the tree better. I was like, does somebody need me to run into the local Target? I was like, it was.
Are you trying to say it wasn't as festive as the downtown Fountain Square Cincinnati tree?
No, our tree is 1,000 times better than
it. Okay. You're just saying that because Steve Lieber was here.
No, truth.
All right.
Truth.
Well, should we wrap things up?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of That's So Cincinnati, a podcast and a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And if you value local journalism, and who doesn't, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.